You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
This is a moment that occurs only once in two decades. Call it a harmonic convergence, a change in leadership taking place simultaneously in China and the United States. The Chinese Communist Party meets for its 18th National Congress in Beijing when Chinese President Hu Jintao will step down to make way for his successor, Xi Jinping. James Fallows, national correspondent for The Atlantic, whose most recent book is China Airborne, says this unique moment is a chance to observe two radically different systems of government facing remarkably similar leadership challenges.
In the United States, we have transparency to a fault. We have, you know, we saw all the goods and bads of the American electoral system, its inclusiveness, its chaos, its inequalities. Fortunately, it seems as if the results here were not determined by the sorts of things that have skewed it, say, 12 years ago, of lines that kept people from voting, et cetera, et cetera. So one is the contrast between this super transparency and super opaqueness on the Chinese side, where as the Congress is going to pass on power in China begins, even the most informed observers are saying they're not really sure how many members are going to be on the new standing committee on the Politburo, who they're going to be, at what point the current president Hu Jintao is going to give up command of the military, et cetera. So one is simply the contrast. The other thing I think would say be a fun fact is that in very different ways, the political systems of both countries are their main vulnerability. I think on the American side, the difficulty we have in matching our great national resources to our national problems, that is our challenge. In China, you have this hugely surging economy strapped onto an increasingly out-of-date political system, and how that tension is reconciled is their big choice and decision.
And what would you make of the new leadership as far as we know it? Are they poised to do something fundamentally different, or is it kind of maintain and accommodate the existing and growing special interests in China?
There are a couple of reasons to think that the latter possibility is the more likely one. One is the system is machined there so that people who rise to the top in it are not really flamboyant individuals. They are creatures of the system more than they are people who are great charismatic leaders. And so if you think of other long-term professional bureaucracies, those who rise to the top are of the system rather than of themselves. Another reason why transition is slow is that it takes a number of years. As I was mentioning, Hu Jintao, the current president, will probably run the military for the next year or two. And so that's a very significant hold on power. Also, there are so many embroiled interest groups, economic, regional, clan-like to be accommodated that you have on the one side really fundamental debates going on in China about whether the political system needs to make a big change. And on the other hand, all the reasons to think there is just impaction. And doing nothing or going more or less on the current path is the easiest thing day by day, although it may be the riskiest long term for them.
So it's a little like our fiscal cliff problem here in the sense that kicking the can down the road is ultimately the best they can do.
Yes, and they have on the one hand, compared with the fiscal cliff, if they decide to do something, they can do it more easily. There's less of the sort of legislative or democratic folderol. On the other hand, there's not the enforced mechanism of the fiscal cliff that we have, for example, right now to drive a decision.
Talk a little bit about the Xi Jinping.
Mm-hmm.
His background is as a princeling.
Yes.
So he has communist roots. He also has military background. It would seem that he has a broad potential influence over the bureaucracy. How much of that will he show, and how much of a figurehead will he be for whoever's pulling the strings behind the scene?
I think the fact that the only honest answer to questions like this is no one really knows is a sign of the problem. He is seen in general to be more a creature of Jiang Zemin, who was the president in the Bill Clinton era in the United States, who was seen as a more Western-friendly, business-friendly figure than Hu Jintao and Wen Jiabao, who've been in charge for the last 10 years. So he's from that camp as opposed to the Hu camp. People who are hopeful about him recall that he has some warm ties with the United States based on his visit long ago to some farm in Iowa, which apparently left a big impression on him. His ties to the military are seen as a more positive than negative feature from the world's perspective in that the larger challenge about China is if the military is too independent of its political leadership and sort of, you know, spinning out on its own. And if Mr. Xi has more ties there, that might be a better thing. The estrangement of the People's Liberation Army from its own government and the rest of the world is a potential risk factor, too. So we're just going to have to see how this rolls out.
One of the new things for this transition is the signs of dissent on the difficult-to-control internet. Here are some BBC Chinese service voices giving us in translation some of the tweets and texts that are emerging even as this power transition is taking place.
Can Daddy Hu's speech give people more money? Can it raise salaries or give us houses?
I have so much work to do, but I have been told to watch the Congress, and he's talking rubbish.
I truly admire the health and physique of our leaders. Over 70 years old, and they can sit for hours without going to the toilet. Amazing.
That's a lot of candor for the Chinese, shall we call it, electorate? Probably not, but Chinese citizens are certainly weighing in.
They certainly are, and I think that as China has prospered and become more sophisticated over these past 30 years, there are the goods and bads from the political systems point of view. The good is, of course, most people have felt, if they look back 5 years, 10 years in their family's history, they are dramatically better off than they used to be. That builds legitimacy. On the other hand, people are no fools in China, and there is the censors are always about 1 inch ahead or perhaps half an inch behind the especially young people who are speaking out very freely. So if the political system cannot keep up in some way with this sophisticated critique from an increasingly educated China, that's one more problem for them to deal with.
Finally, you know, from your perspective, if I was an 18-year-old, all right, and I was looking for a job in the summer and headed to college maybe, would I want to work at Foxconn? Would I go, oh, I'll just work at Foxconn, that'll be fine, and that will be how my life goes?
If you were a Chinese 18-year-old, which I saw bazillions of 2 weeks ago in Foxconn factories in southern China, you would go there for a while. You know, they pour in by the thousands every week for new jobs at Foxconn. They work out there for a while, and then they leave. You know, and I think it's partly because they're burned out. They have typically – they often have 50-hour weeks with overtime pay. But it is there is the sense that America might have had 100 years ago of these young people pouring out of the countryside into the cities and then going God knows where. So you'd work there for a while, I think.
And so it's a little bit like the Ford factory in the 21st
yes,
century.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. James Fallows, national correspondent for The Atlantic. His most recent book is China Airborne. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, John.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia, and the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable development in communities across the country. More at rockfound.org.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.